Today on Seculo, the Taliban accomplished what Biden could not.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. I do want to take your calls to 1-800-684-3110 because it's just bizarre to see how the Biden administration and John Kirby are utilizing the fact that the Taliban announced, the U.S. has now confirmed that they killed the ISIS-K leader. That's ISIS operating in Afghanistan, who was responsible for orchestrating the attack that killed, the bombing attack that killed 13 Americans during our botched withdrawal of Afghanistan. And he says, look, it's a reason why we don't need to have boots on the ground in Afghanistan. But that's the Taliban accomplishing something the U.S. should have been focused on doing. And of course, we are hampered in our ability to do that because in the botched withdrawal, we left no one on the ground, which was never the strategy of the Trump administration. You know, that was never their goal, was even in a withdrawal, was to keep a military presence, not one that would be outward focusing on, you know, gunfights in the streets, but to make sure that you maintain a presence. And if you look at U.S. victories in conflicts around the world, we still have a presence in those places. If you look at places where it's been kind of a draw or loss, we don't. And in Afghanistan, unfortunately, we had this situation where we're thanking the Taliban. And by the way, the Taliban didn't do this because they killed Americans. The Taliban is in a conflict. He leaves this out in the statement. I'll play it for you in just a second. He leaves out the fact that the Taliban only did this because they are fighting with ISIS-K. It's not because they are altruistic in trying to revenge the death of American servicemen and women. Take a listen. This is CNN's Kate Baldwin asking about this specifically to John Kirby.
John, after the Abbeygate attack, everyone will remember President Biden's speech that night, and he vowed retribution. I mean, in it, he said, we will not forgive, we will not forget, we will hunt you down and make you pay. The fact that the Taliban is who killed this leader, does this speak to the limits of U.S. capabilities in Afghanistan after the withdrawal?
No, actually, Kate, I think it validates the president's decision to leave Afghanistan altogether. You don't need to have a big presence on the ground, boots on the ground, to go after terrorist threats, whether they're in Afghanistan or elsewhere. The Taliban killed this individual. I think it's a good thing that he's gone.
Okay, that's the only part I agree with. It's good that he's gone. What I don't like to see is around the world headlines, and I think we pulled that, right? We pulled the headlines around the world about how the Taliban killed the ISIS leader responsible for killing Americans, the mastermind. And you kind of, again, can compare and contrast that to when al-Baghdadi was killed by the U.S. government and the military when Donald Trump ordered that attack. And in those articles, of course, it's the U.S. America takes out al-Baghdadi. America takes out this leader. I mean, that's the difference here, is that on the one hand, we have a tough approach, depending on who the leadership is. But do you want the Taliban to be doing your work on retribution when it's an attack on Americans? You trust them to carry that out? I want to take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. And how weak does it look that they are trying to celebrate this as a, again, the only positive is that person is dead, that they have been killed. But the fact that we have no presence after all those years in Afghanistan, after that botched withdrawal, that we have no presence there to maintain, again, just enough presence to keep an eye on what's going on, to make sure you don't see a rise in terror groups. And by the way, it was very close to China's nuclear facilities, where they produce a lot of their nuclear weapons. So we'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. I think it just underscores, again, it's the destabilization of the world under the Biden administration. Look at all of the conflict. Look at all the uncertainty. We have Iran seizing a vessel, an oil vessel headed to the United States, headed to Houston. They seized it because they're not scared of us. 1-800-684-3110. We'll be right back. Sekio. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. We have a great broadcast coming up, too. In the second half hour of the broadcast, we're joined by Rick Rennell. We're going to talk to him about this. We're going to talk to him about the State Department holding withholding key documents on Afghanistan as well. And we also are going to be joined in the final segment of the broadcast by the newest member of the Sekio broadcast team, Tulsi Gabbard, who, again, is our senior military and political analyst. So a lot to talk about on the show today, and you definitely want to stay with it. If you're watching the broadcast, share it with your friends and family. You know Rumble's our preferred place for you to watch. But if you're on Facebook and YouTube, share it there as well. And click that subscribe button if you're on Rumble. It's a great place to do it. And follow button there because, again, we're keep adding members to the broadcast team. And I think, you know, again, it's really compelling what we're able to bring to you each day. I want to play this. This is President Joe Biden. After the botched withdrawal in Afghanistan in 2021, leaving 13 men and women of our armed forces dead. The reason why we're talking about this is because the leader of the ISIS group responsible for that attack was killed in Afghanistan. By a U.S. drone strike? No. By U.S. special forces? No. By the Taliban? Not because he was responsible for the death of 13 Americans, but because they are in a direct conflict with ISIS-K. Now, you could say, it's wonderful that the Taliban and ISIS are fighting each other because it gives them less time to focus on trying to kill Americans. But don't for a minute think this was some virtuous move, again, or altruistic move that they were avenging the United States for us. But yet the Biden administration wants you to believe that. And it's exactly opposite of what Joe Biden said would happen to those individuals that were responsible for killing the 13 Americans. Take a listen.
To those who carried out this attack, as well as anyone who wishes America harm, know this. We will not forgive. We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay. I will defend our interests and our people with every measure at my command.
You know, it sounds wonderful. He didn't do it. The Taliban did what he couldn't. It's really, I hate saying that, but it's the truth. 1-800-684-3110, I want you to weigh in on this because I want to contrast this. Because remember, they continue to blame, and we talked to Rick Rennell, we talked to Mike Pompeo, even we talked to Tulsi. They continue to blame the Trump administration for every one of their problems. If the border's a problem, it's the Trump administration. If it's Ukraine, somehow that's the Trump administration. Even though Russia took no aggressive action under the Trump administration, they did under the Biden, the Obama-Biden administration when they annexed Crimea. They did again under Biden when they launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. That didn't happen under President Trump. And then this blaming like, oh, well, President Trump, he got us in a mess in Afghanistan. We had no other option but to totally withdraw. Take a listen to what he said that his plans were for Afghanistan if he was still in charge of the troop drawdown in Afghanistan. Take a listen.
It was all lined up. The Taliban was petrified of us. They were just staying away. And all he had to do is take what we did and finish it up and take all the equipment out. I actually said every nail, every screw, I want everything out. And the people out, obviously, you start with the people and then the equipment. And then you blow up what you want to blow up and you keep maybe Bagram, because we were planning on keeping Bagram because of its relationship, its location to China. This is a $10 billion base that they built over years, and it's there. It's built, and it's near. It's in a perfect territory for us to have as an outpost.
And that's exactly what we are, you know, advocating for, is that when you commit to these conflicts, you want the troop withdrawals. You don't want to have endless war. And you can question even how we started these wars, and did we go in the right way by doing large-scale forces instead of targeted special operations attack on the actual terrorist responsible for 9/11. But needless to say, these presidents, including President Trump, had to deal with what he was dealt with, and that was how to withdraw in Afghanistan. It was never just to say, goodbye, we're going to give up all of our assets, all the bloodshed of American lives here. No, we were going to keep a major outpost, a $10 billion military base and air base, not only to keep enough, and again, it would keep the troops there, they'd be safe, it'd be like a green zone, that had plenty of space to kind of keep it safe. And it not only was a great outpost in Afghanistan, it was a great outpost to keep an eye on China without having more bloodshed, without having to, again, fully withdraw and give all these assets over to the Taliban. So again, as we take your calls, I always want to contrast that, because you will constantly hear over the next 2 years, and you've already heard it over the last few months, whenever there is a problem the Biden administration is facing, now, you know, years into their administration, they blame President Trump. They blame the Trump administration. And every time I will remind you of exactly what the Trump administration was doing, how they left things for the Biden administration. They left the world in a very safe place. They left the Middle East with unbelievable allegiances made between Israel and the Gulf states, the Abraham Accords. But they have botched that entirely. Instead of bringing Saudi Arabia in, which they were about to join the Abraham Accords, Saudi Arabia has felt like they've had to now turn to Iran, brokered by China, to build a new allegiance. I mean, that puts our troops in a very dangerous place. Our troops are all over these places around the world. And I think, again, to contrast that, Governor DeSantis is in Israel today, because yesterday marked the 75th anniversary of Israel's independence as a modern state of Israel. And he was there, of course, before. It looks like he's going to announce his presidential campaign, the reports are, sometime next month. So we think that's sometime in May, because the state legislature there approved the law, which allows him to stay as governor and run for president. That was a change in their state law. That was done, and it was done totally openly. And so it looks like he is going to enter the race pretty soon. He's in Israel. He's doing that world tour. And he speaks to the importance. And I think, you know, this is a key, whether you like Donald Trump, whether you like Ron DeSantis, whether you like Nikki Haley or Tim Scott or somebody else that hasn't even gotten in the race yet. This is a key plank of conservatism, of American values, and American ideas. Take a listen to DeSantis.
The U.S. must defend Israel against disfavored treatment by the United Nations and other international bodies and agenda-driven international advocacy organizations. And we must reject those who reject Israel's right to exist as a Jewish state. That is anti-Semitism.
And we don't see that from our current administration. And they're not putting Israel in a good situation with the foreign policy decisions they're making. So instead of a new alliance, could you believe that alliance between, even if it's an economic and tourist alliance between the Saudis and Israel, the Saudis have been opening up a lot more. You'll see a lot more people there, a lot more tourism there. That was something when I was growing up, that was not a place open up to American tourists. Unless you were going on the Hajj as a Muslim, you were not going to Saudi Arabia, unless it was for official diplomatic meetings. So instead of saying, hey, you're not perfect, but we're working on this relationship, they've totally botched that relationship. That puts Israel at risk, because instead of having another few countries who are in the same block opposed to a nuclear Iran, who could unite against a dangerous Iran, we're seeing the opposite, because they got to survive, these countries. So if they think the U.S. isn't going to have their back, guess who they go to? They go to China to say, hey, can you broker a deal with us in Iran? That's almost unheard of, a Saudi-Iran deal. But it's reality. Right now, as we speak, that is the reality that's ongoing. And I mentioned the Iranian aggression that continues. They just seized an oil tanker that was headed to Texas, that was flagged under the Marshall Islands. That's common, these international oil tankers. They seized it in the Gulf of Oman. It had just come from Kuwait, a U.S. ally, with oil, or to get oil from the United States. And Iran is seizing these vessels. Iran is acting in an aggressive, not defensive, aggressive way, because they have new allies up and down the Persian Gulf into the Gulf of Oman and the Strait of Hormuz. This is a very dangerous world, and yet this administration continues to make it more dangerous for all of it and for all of us. And then, of course, there's the domestic issues. We come back, we're going to talk some domestic economic issues. We're going to get back to these topics too. We've got Rick Rinnell and Tulsi Gabbard coming up on the broadcast, so you want to stick with us. But there's also, you know, reports about what's going on with our own economy right here at home. So again, I encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. We are in a matching challenge right now where you can double the impact of your donation at aclj.org. So it's a great month if you've considered donating because you appreciate not just this broadcast, but the work that we do in courts, the work that we do on Capitol Hill, the work that we do around the world, the office, ACLJ Jerusalem. Support our work and make a donation at aclj.org, and you will have that matched by a donor, which means if you donate $25 right now online at aclj.org, a donor will match that $25 donation. They've already pledged to do it. So because of you, the ACLJ would receive $50. That continues this entire month. I also want you to check out and make sure you're sharing it with your friends and family, aclj.org/coverup. Check it out and share it. We'll be right back. To Secula, listen, we're going to continue talking about these international issues. We got Rick Grinnell and Tulsi Gabbard coming up in the second half hour of the broadcast. Tulsi, a newest member of the Secula broadcast team, is a senior military and political analyst who certainly brings a unique perspective because she's been in the Democrat Party. She's a lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserves today. I mean, so is still active with our U.S. Armed Forces as recently as just last year was on a special mission. Fighting Al-Qaeda, and she's talked about that overseas in Africa. So she understands all these issues, but is also, someone who cautions against the U.S. jumping into conflicts. And I think we all have, a new question of kind of where we are militarily. So if you're on the line to discuss that or want to talk about that, we will at 1-800-684-3110. I do want to update you on some economic news because Lord knows that's important to all of us living in the United States. First is the debt ceiling package. I want to go to Harry Hutchinson from our policy director. Harry, a lot of people thought McCarthy was not going to be able to get the votes together, which would say we would raise the debt ceiling. But if we're going to raise the debt ceiling, we have to cut $4.8 trillion in spending. It did pass the Republican-controlled House. So he was able to get that through. And a lot of people think this is how he potentially gets to the table with Joe Biden and the Democrats.
Yes, I think that's precisely correct. So this is a big victory for Kevin McCarthy, a big victory for his leadership team, and it puts the ball in Joe Biden's court. And so the real question today is whether or not Joe Biden is prepared to play as an adult, or will he continue to play in the dirt as if he were a little kid. I would forecast that he will continue to play like he's a little kid. And so the prospects for converting this House victory into significant negotiations is those prospects are fairly limited. But this is a big victory for Kevin McCarthy and for the American people, because we basically now have placed a marker down. The ball is in Joe Biden's court, and the question becomes, what will he do with it?
Yeah, and so far he has refused to even negotiate with Kevin McCarthy. Now, there's a couple of things that are going to be interesting about this. Obviously, the Democrat-controlled Senate is not going to be friendly to this, but they also aren't going to want a government shutdown. So you would imagine, Harry, that while Republicans might not get everything they want when this ultimately comes to the table, they should be able to get more than nothing. They should be able to get some concessions to prevent a government shutdown. And this is going to go over the next couple of months. And we're in an economic state where we probably don't need that kind of move right now in our country, or that kind of uncertainty, because then world markets freak out.
I think you're correct. And so the real question now becomes, beyond Joe Biden, whether or not Senate Republicans can muster enough gumption to basically say that they are unwilling to pass a debt ceiling increase without some concessions on the part of the president. And so right now, I don't have a huge amount of confidence in Republican leadership. There are certainly some individuals in the Senate Republicans, who are more than willing to offer some reductions in spending. At the same point in time, of course, we also have to deal with a slowdown in the economy. So if you look at the last quarter, economic growth only rose by 1%. more likely than not, we will see perhaps a shrinkage in the next quarter. And then the question becomes, what will the Federal Reserve do in the face of this gloomy economic news? And right now, the Fed is on course, I think, to raise interest rates again a quarter point, but they may actually begin to pause with respect to interest rate rises, because it's important to keep in mind that it takes a while for interest increases to filter into the market.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the economic reports, it's a much slower growth than was expected. So the people who were kind of were putting together the analysis and trying to predict, they thought that the growth was going to continue at these kind of rates where we somehow justified, you know, raising inflation rates, and yet we're starting to see the slowdown. And this is tied into the folks who have said, who are also raising concern about an actual recession, an actual full-scale recession.
I think that's precisely correct. So the real issue is whether or not there is a slowdown in economic growth, and I think we're seeing the early signs of that. And then number two, when will price inflation begin to decline? And so I think the Fed is looking for evidence that prices are going to fall. As I've mentioned previously, housing prices and housing sales have already cratered in the West, in Las Vegas, and in California, and in many other parts of the country. So there's some evidence that there is a slowdown in the works, but the question becomes, when will price inflation begin to fall, particularly consumer prices and even wholesale prices? That is the $250 million question.
Yeah, I mean, so it's kind of at this point, I think people are kind of sick of the interest rate hikes. And maybe this data is finally showing that to the U.S. Government and the feds that, listen, people don't have this kind of extra cash, or it's running out. Whatever extra cash they did put together under the COVID lockdowns and shutdowns and the payments that went out and the checks that went out, and that they can't afford to keep. And we're seeing the housing markets across the country as well. I think it's basically reflected in all sectors that people who were in kind of a buy mode are now in a kind of hold tight mode.
I think that is correct. And then the other factor that's out there is the labor participation or labor force participation rate. And so I would anticipate that the labor force participation rate will rise. What does that mean? It means more and more employees are coming back into the market, and that may reduce inflation because labor costs may not rise as rapidly as manufacturers expected. So if that begins to happen, this will slow down the rate of growth in inflation. And then the interest rates will probably gradually come back down, but I don't foresee a sharp decline in interest rates for the foreseeable future.
You know, folks, we got a lot to talk about coming up. I wanted to give you that economic update, that debt ceiling update, too, in the House of Representatives, because a lot of people thought Republicans wouldn't come together because it's such a, again, a kind of a broad spectrum party in the House. From moderates to very conservative, and Kevin McCarthy was able to get the votes together. I think the best part about that is he has been ignored. House Republicans have been ignored by the Biden White House and by the Senate Democrats on negotiating when it comes to the debt and the debt ceiling, but also cuts to spending. Now, I don't imagine the Democrats are going to go along with $4.8 trillion in spending cuts, but what you can start doing is putting some pressure on Democrats in the Senate, like the Testers and the Manchins of the world, who, you know, vote for a lot of things like the Inflation Reduction Act and then say how horrible it is, and it was, oh, like somehow they didn't understand what it was going to do. Well, maybe this time around we can, you know, the numbers are the numbers. We know where our debt is. We know they're willing to raise the debt ceiling so we don't default. But also, let's get our own house fiscally in order. We come back. I will take more of your calls at 1-800-684-3110, so hang on the line if you're on the line. Rick Grenell joining us, Tulsi Gabbard joining us. You don't want to miss it. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Donate today.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Yeah, as Chicklet wrote it on Rumble, John Kirby gaslighting Americans. This is why we say that, and I want to reset for you. Welcome back to Sekulow. We're going to talk about this with Rick Rennell in just a minute, former acting director of national intelligence and a senior analyst, a senior member of our team at the ACLJ, and of course, regularly on this broadcast to kind of break this down, because John Kirby taking credit for what the Taliban did and the Biden administration could not. Remember, we already played for you. Joe Biden said after our 13 men and women were killed in the botched withdrawal in Afghanistan, the servicemen and women, that you know, we would hold those accountable. We'd do whatever it takes. And then we find out yesterday, and listen, it's good news that the head of ISIS-K that responsible for organizing the bombing attack that killed those Americans is dead. But they are not dead at the hands of the U.S. government or an ally or special operations or a U.S. drone or, you know, or our intelligence. They are dead because the Taliban killed that leader because they are in a fight with ISIS-K. And you can say it's wonderful when those extremist groups are fighting each other. They have less time to plan attacks on us. But let me tell you, they didn't kill that leader for us. And yet they kind of want to gaslight and act like this was part of their plan of the full withdrawal. See, it's why we don't need to be in Afghanistan. Take a listen.
John, after the Abbeygate attack, everyone will remember President Biden's speech that night, and he vowed retribution. I mean, in it, he said, we will not forgive. We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay. The fact that the Taliban is who killed this leader, does this speak to the limits of U.S. capabilities in Afghanistan after the withdrawal?
No, actually, Kate, I think it validates the president's decision to leave Afghanistan altogether. You don't need to have a big presence on the ground, boots on the ground, to go after terrorist threats, whether they're in Afghanistan or elsewhere. The Taliban killed this individual. I think it's a good thing that he's gone.
You know, I want to take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Let me go to Bill in Wyoming on line two. Hey, Bill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I got a statement and then a question that I believe follows up with that, because I saw this news yesterday early in the morning, and it seems to me that what happened is that the Taliban actually told the world that this administration is nothing but a bunch of paper tigers. And then my question is, isn't this the second administration that actually has that is in that type of spotlight, being paper tigers?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that the idea is, you know, we can talk tough, and that's what Joe Biden did, but if you don't actually respond aggressively and timely, then that is the case that the world is making right now, that we are paper tigers, that we are, while we have all this great strength and we have all this military might, and, you know, I'm proud of the men and women who serve our country, and it's certainly nothing against any of them. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard's part of our broadcast team, is part of that team as Lieutenant Colonel in the Army Reserves. And she's coming up on the broadcast. It's, again, they follow their orders from the leaders, the political leaders. And when you show weakness around the world, when you draw red lines and you let them be crossed, and you don't do anything about it, when you leave Americans behind in Afghanistan or even Sudan, and you try to, again, gaslight Americans by saying, well, they weren't really fully American. You know, they are American citizens, but they were also citizens of Sudan. And they want to be in a war-torn country with two violent military groups killing each other in the streets. So don't worry about them. They don't want to leave. And then we're told, they actually do want to leave, and two have already been killed that we know of. And again, it's that whole idea. It's why Iran is seizing seizing international vessels headed to the United States, oil vessels. Now, maybe they don't care because it's an oil vessel. So it doesn't go with John Kerry's big climate plans. So I guess Iran can just say, seize all the oil vessels you want. We don't want that going to Houston because they want to kill that industry, right? So, but the fact that Iran's doing it just shows you, like they had their proxy Hezbollah firing at our base in Syria, they are taking aggressive actions, not defensive, but aggressive actions. But maybe it's because our president can't even do a press conference, which he rarely does, without note cards, not just telling him which reporter to go to, but what the question will be. What country are we living in when the press can't just ask a question without telling the president ahead of time? We'll be right back on Sekulow. All right, welcome back to Sekhil. We are taking your calls, too, 1-800-684-3120. You know, we are told by this administration, and they love to gaslight over and over again, you know, it's not about press conferences, it's not about interviews, which, by the way, if you look at news conferences just quickly, Joe Biden, as long as they've been tracked, this is since the Reagan years, he's only done more news conferences than Reagan. He has answered less questions than President Obama, Trump, Clinton, Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush. The lowest next to that in their first 2 years of their presidency was still about double. So, I mean, you're talking about significantly less interviews, less news conferences. But then Karine Jean-Pierre, White House press secretary, will tell us, but he's answered more questions. Now, I want to go right to Rick Rennell, who is a senior advisor at the ACLJ, former acting director of national intelligence, but also has an extensive background in communications. Because, Rick, right away, it's total gaslighting. And people saw it yesterday when President Biden had a press conference with the South Korean president. And we can put it up on the screen for people so they can see it while we talk about it. And he not only had the card of who to go to ask a question, but he literally had their question and his response written out. I don't think Rick, Karine Jean-Pierre, or any American media outlet should then count any of those kind of questions as an actual question to the president.
Well, it's pathetic. It's propaganda. It's government-sponsored media. This Los Angeles Times reporter should be fired. The editor who approved doing this should be fired. This is a word-for-word question. We aren't stupid. We aren't stupid. Like, so what the media in Washington, D.C. is trying to spin right now is, oh, we gave the subject matter, and that's pretty standard. It's not standard to give a word-for-word question so that it appears on the card of the president. I just tweeted out the picture, and it's really outrageous. You've got the reporter's picture, you've got the reporter's name, you've got the exact question on Joe Biden's card, and then he starts to take questions, and you actually see in the video the person who's walking around with the mic like Oprah is literally walking toward the LA Times reporter before Joe Biden calls on the LA Times reporter. This was scripted. The White House staff knew who was coming. They all had a cheat sheet. This is the reporter that's getting the question. So the young staffer starts to walk over there before they're even called on. This is so outrageous, and the silence from the rest of the media in Washington, D.C. is deafening. They're all just trying to put a bow on this and pretend like we don't, like there's nothing to see here. The rest of us outside of Washington, D.C., know it's pathetic, and we're embarrassed by what's been transpiring in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I mean, that's the second point I want to make, Rick, is that it means that the White House is able to get these media outlets to go along with this and play a game like they're really getting to ask a question, when in fact they aren't. I mean, it's just acting at that point.
Dictators around the world are looking at what's happening in Washington, D.C., and they're jealous. They're jealous of the system because it's totally controlled by government. You've got government mouthpieces now. Look, if you're listening to this broadcast and you're as outraged as I am, and you're so frustrated, I just have to say that there is one thing you can do. You can talk about these issues louder. You can write a small check to ACLJ. You can talk about the work that groups like the ACLJ are doing. I would throw out Judicial Watch. I'm not affiliated with Judicial Watch, but they do great work. Start supporting these organizations that are holding Washington, D.C. politicians to account. We do great work. We have a team of lawyers. We're pushing out FOIA requests, demanding that the media, demanding that the government seize their hypocrisy. We're pointing it out. We're calling out corruption. This is how we have to go to war. This is the combat that we have to do, because without this, we have a bunch of LA Times reporters and New York Times reporters and CNN reporters who all get together and they're laughing at the rest of America because they're putting one over on us. We can't allow that to happen. We're going to lose our country if we don't start fighting.
Yeah, I want to turn to more of these kind of communications, just the way they're just trying to spin it. So we played it for people on the broadcast already, which is John Kirby, you know, announcing again, taking the question on the fact that it was the Taliban that killed the leader of ISIS-K, who was responsible for organizing the bomb attack that killed 13 American servicemen and women during their botched withdrawal of Afghanistan. Surprised at that statement, he didn't blame the Trump administration somehow for something there. But what he did was say it was proof that their withdrawal worked. As if like this was like the Taliban did this on purpose. The Taliban did this, Rick, because they were in a fight with ISIS-K. They weren't directly targeting to avenge Americans. But yet that's the kind of tone that they say. It's like, well, see, our withdrawal worked. As if, what about the 13 dead Americans? I mean, but he actually got up there and he says it. And I guess, you know, the news just reports it.
Yeah, don't forget that the John Kirby and the original government mouthpieces told us that we had killed terrorists in Afghanistan in response to all of this. And what we found out weeks later, or days later, actually, was that we killed children. That it wasn't the terrorists. And so this is a repackaging of a failure, and they're trying to put a bow on it to pretend like our failure wasn't a failure. See, we told you it really was strategically brilliant. But I also have to say, you know, they spent a lot of time at the Biden White House saying that the withdrawal from Afghanistan was Donald Trump's fault. And then they messed it up there at the end. And now they're saying, oh, see how the president's decision to withdraw was such a brilliant idea because now we've got terrorists killing terrorists. This is an administration that will just say anything. There's no strategy. It's failure after failure, and then they repackage it as a success, and the media go along with it. It's really pathetic.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's going to, again, take center stage once again, not because Biden wants it to, not because John Kirby wants it to, but because, you know, even in his announcement, he doesn't even mention that these kind of anything going on in the world. It wasn't anywhere in Joe Biden's presidential announcement or any of the bad things happening around the world. But we even see a move on Capitol Hill. And I wanted to ask you about this. We saw Congressman McCaul, who chairs the House Foreign Affairs Committee, because the State Department released that 12-page summary of the after-action report about the withdrawal in Afghanistan. And the 12-page summary was just a blaming of the Trump administration. He said, I want to see all 87 pages. I think that at least because there's Republicans in charge of the committees in the House, Rick, that they are not letting these issues go by the wayside. They're not forgetting the gaslighting, the spin that the Biden administration is trying to blame a previous administration. They do this for every problem now. But what do you think about this move to get that report so that the American people actually understand why this was so botched?
Yeah, I think my first reaction is just to say, thank God we've got the Republicans in control of the House. They're doing yeoman's work right now. What they're trying to do is be transparent. They're trying to get people to understand that there's a whole nother side to this that we haven't been told over the last couple of years, whether it's Fauci, whether it's the Afghanistan withdrawal, a whole bunch of issues need to be uncovered. And the chairman is doing a great job of that. And I know that he's looking at a whole bunch of foreign issues. I know personally that they're looking at the Balkans and the disaster that is now unfolding there. And so I like transparency. Transparency is not political. It's not partisan. It's something that we should all be demanding.
All right. Rick, as always, we appreciate all of your insight into these issues. I mean, because, I think we're going to face a barrage, folks. And that's why we're going to, you know, really weigh in on our team like Rick and lean on them through this process, because you're going to see a barrage of attacks. Anytime there's a failure, you know, if it's the border, blame Trump. If it's the 13 Americans killed, blame Trump, not the terrorist, not your botched withdrawal. You blame the Trump administration. And so when we have these former administration officials on who are at the highest levels in the cabinet telling you exactly what was going on, and President Trump himself even saying what the plans were to ultimately get out of Afghanistan and how it would have been looked very different from how the Biden administration got out. But this idea that they're somehow hamstrung by anything that's somehow why they can't get control of the border is because maybe it's because they stopped building the wall. Maybe it's because they aren't funding Customs and Border Patrol, but instead want to hire 80,000 new IRS agents with billions of dollars. I mean, these are the real issues. So again, Tulsi Gabbard, who is the newest member of our broadcast team, is coming up next on Seculo, so you don't want to miss that. Share the broadcast. Continue to. We're made it live here with your friends and family, and especially if you're watching. Make sure you follow us on Rumble. Share it right now with your friends and family so you don't miss so they don't miss Tulsi. Coming up next on Seculo, we're going to talk through a number of these issues. The Biden announcement, the Democrats' decision to say, oh, we don't need any debates, even though there's people polling at like 21%. RFK Jr., Marianne Williamson is, I think, polling at 9% against the sitting president. So we'll take your thoughts on that too, but support the work of the ACLJ. That's at aclj.org. Donate today. We'll be right back with Tulsi Gabbard. Seculo. We're joined now by our senior military and political analyst, newest member of the Seculo broadcast team, former member of Congress and presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi, I want to go to you first because on President Biden's announcement this week to run for re-election, we heard a lot about freedom. And we didn't hear a lot about what was going on in the world, but images of January 6th, issues like abortion, and then there's just talk of freedom. But it seems like under this administration, and we've seen even documents to see how they've tried to pressure social media companies to basically keep us from being able to have the right to free speech. So there's no freedom for people who have a counter view. You only have freedom under this administration's view of the First Amendment if you agree with their talking points.
Jordan, it's good to see you. And I thought the same thing when I saw that video. When I found that the DNC was not going to allow for any presidential primary debates for voters to be able to actually question and examine President Biden's record and compare and contrast with others who are running. They talk about freedom. They talk about democracy. They talk about rights. But as you said, we are only free to speak if they find our speech acceptable. We can only examine facts and information and truth if they deem those things to be acceptable and truth and facts and information. There are so many different issues here that we could go down the list on, and we would find on just about all of them how the Biden administration is failing to meet that mark of actually upholding our God-given rights and freedoms enshrined in the Constitution and Bill of Rights. So to me, hearing his message was actually quite insulting, given how they are directly trying to undermine our freedoms at every turn.
Yeah, and the rest of the message just ignored all of the crises they've created around the world, which are just a mess and they affect us all here domestically. You brought up, too, I wanted to ask you about that specifically because you ran for president in the Democrat primary in 2020, and so you've seen this process. But the DNC has said, and it's not whether or not they can force Joe Biden to go to a debate, he can decide that, but they're not even going to hold debates, even though somewhat unexpectedly for, I guess, some inside the Democrat Party, you have a couple of candidates who announced RFK Jr., who's polling in some polls 21% of the vote, Democrat primary vote. Marianne Williamson back at 9% in some of these polls. You got 30% of Democrats saying they are not in these polls right now, that they would vote for someone else in the Democrat primary. And yet, again, this kind of idea, we saw it yesterday in the press conference, Tulsi, when he's got the card. And it's got the question, it's got the answer. He knows everything. So there's no actual, the press isn't holding him accountable at all. Even when it looks like they have an opportunity to ask him a question, they are literally all just actors with a script. And that, to me, is just very scary as an American.
It's scary, Jordan, and it's incredibly offensive because it really reveals what Joe Biden and his administration and his kind of whole cabal of the Washington, the permanent Washington, which includes the mainstream media, which includes their friends in big tech and social media, which includes their friends in the national security state, all of whom have a vested interest in Joe Biden getting elected, not because they think he's some great, fantastic leader who's going to save this country, but because him remaining in power allows them to maintain their power. So it's an insult to voters that they're not willing to allow us to be able to question and examine him and his record. It's an insult to voters when you look at how blatantly they are rigging this system. We talked a little bit earlier about how they did it a little more subtly when I ran for president of the Democratic primary in 2020. It's just blatant now. They're just saying, nope, we will not allow this democracy to work as it should by having our candidates debate. We're giving you one choice and one choice only, and that is Joe Biden. But then that leads to the next step, which is Joe Biden, if Joe Biden gets reelected, what happens next? Very quickly, I can imagine we will see a Vice President Kamala Harris become President Kamala Harris, and she becomes the next puppet for the permanent Washington to be able to control.
And I think she's demonstrated that she would be, I mean, people talk about Joe Biden's age and competency, but when we see Vice President Harris, she doesn't, I mean, I'm not real confident in anything she has to say. In fact, most of the time when she's speaking, I have a tough time, even when it's kind of a gimme speech, in front of supporters, figuring out what she's even trying to say. But I think what you said is that combined issue is that Washington, the establishment there, all of those different elements of it, not just the political parties, but also the media, the corporate interest, they're okay now with having leaders like that who aren't bold, who can't answer questions, who don't speak and kind of inspire Americans, but instead just kind of mumble along, but put in the people that they want and go along with the policies that they're asking for without question.
You're right. That's exactly right. It's not even a question. Well, you know, are they looking for bold and courageous leaders who can be decisive and ensure the safety, security, and freedom of our country? They are looking for people who they can control, because what we're talking about is a whole level of corrupt people who are pulling the strings behind the curtain. And so, no, they don't care about capabilities. They don't care about qualifications. They don't care about having someone who can make that decision to pull us back from the brink of nuclear war that President Biden and his administration has brought us to. You look at Kamala Harris, you're right. She can hardly string together words that make sense over and over. So there's a capability, a problem at a basic level. But let's look at the more serious issue. Can you imagine President Kamala Harris as commander in chief, making decisions about the lives of our men and women in uniform, my brothers and sisters in uniform, making the decisions about war and peace, the life and death of people around the world? This is an incredibly dangerous proposition. We've seen how dangerous the Biden administration has already been. Kamala Harris as president and commander in chief would be catastrophic for our country and the world.
I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, early on, it seemed like Democrats realized that and said, you know, maybe we don't need her as vice president if he does decide to run again. But now they've kind of gone all in. I think it's because of what we already discussed. They know they can control these folks, so they choose that over competency. And so they keep Mayorkas in. Because I wanted to ask you about something, you know, substantive to this policy issue. There's a whistleblower yesterday. This just makes me sad for our country. And who comes right out of HHS, was sent to the border, goes to Congress and says, we are a middleman right now, the U.S. government, in child trafficking. And of course, we're finding kids in factories all across America. The Biden administration, they shrug their shoulders, say, we don't see those. We don't think that's a real problem.
They don't think that's a real problem. They don't think their open border policies are a real problem. They say without any smirk on their face that they think that the border is secure. All of these different examples lead to the fact that we have an administration with people who are unwilling to recognize the truth or unwilling to speak the truth, and therefore incapable of actually solving the very real problems that the American people face. That is what needs to confront Democrats, Republicans, independents. Those who care about this country need to examine the facts very carefully as we decide who will be our next president.
We're going to continue to do that. Tulsi, we appreciate you joining the Secular Broadcast team and the insight you're going to provide each week as we go through this process. And we're about to, go through the political process. We've got the issues all abroad. And I think, you know, your voice is very important for our audience and for our supporters to hear. So we appreciate you joining the team. And folks, we appreciate you. Tulsi can join the team because of your support of organizations like the ACLJ. Donate today at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We've got a lot of information up. Check out ACLJ.org/coverup. I want you to share that with your friends and family. We'll talk to you next time on Secular.